My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Is it possible to project our consciousness non-locally and retrieve important information about loved ones, business, health, and life? Returning as my guest this week on Destination Unlimited is Deborah Lynn Katz. Deborah is an accomplished clairvoyant, remote viewer, medium, and energy healer who works for some of the leading business manufacturers, stockbrokers, and whose clientele includes some of the top celebrities in the nation. She's the author of best-selling books, including the landmark The Complete Clairvoyant, a trilogy. She is also the founder and director of the International School of Clairvoyance. Her website is deborahkatz.com, and she joins me this week to share her path and groundbreaking book, Associative Remote Viewing, The Art and Science of Predicting Outcomes for Sports, Politics, Finances, and the Lottery. Please join me in welcoming back to Destination Unlimited, Deborah Lynn Katz. Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you, Victor. Very happy to be back here with you and your audience.
Deborah, for our listeners meeting you for the first time, please share with us your early path and experiences.
Well, let's see, where do I start? Well, probably in the womb with my identical twin sister, who I attribute to a large part of how I discovered that I and her and so many other people have intuitive abilities, because that was just part of our childhood, was communicating telepathically and empathically with each other, feeling each other's feelings and anticipating each other's thoughts. And so many times we didn't need to even speak. We just knew what the other one was thinking. So this was just a natural part of our existence.
And while this was happening, did you have a sense of this? Did something seem out of line, different from other children?
No, because it didn't occur to us that other children weren't having the same experiences. It was just a normal part of life. You know, at some point, of course, as we got older, we found out that not everybody understood these things or were interested in these topics. But we just have had a lifelong fascination with them. And so we started at probably around the age of 11 or so. My sister somehow got access to a membership at the Theosophical Society. We lived in Illinois. And so we were having these very complex books sent to us about spiritual topics and meditation. And, you know, we would do our best to try to understand what the books said. But I remember even as a young teen, I was searching for ways to further get control of these our intuitive abilities, because, you know, we would have things happen spontaneously all the time, but we didn't know how to have any control over it. And the books that we read would say that if you practice meditation and lead a spiritual life, then you are more inclined to have an increase in your intuition, but they never gave you really step-by-step instructions of how to make it happen. And they would also, many of the Eastern traditions, they would say you would become more psychic through these practices, but they weren't really advocating for people to, you know, do the practices for that particular purpose. So it wasn't until I was in my late 20s and discovered, I initially discovered the Berkeley Psychic Institute and took classes there for about a year or so, and then went elsewhere. And so that was when I realized that there was really places you could go that would teach you a step-by-step instructions. And of course, some places, you know, have better instructions than others, now I just turned 55. And so I have been now intentionally practicing with lots of techniques. And I started out with a focus on clairvoyance and reading people. And then probably now about 15 years ago or so, I got heavily involved in remote viewing and learned many remote viewing approaches and methodologies. So now have increased my skill set. And then, of course, starting back about 25 years ago, I really, at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of places you could go to really get exact techniques that would help you to put this into practice. You had to go somewhere in person. There wasn't really a whole lot of books at that time. So I would have a lot of people coming to me that I would do readings for and say, oh, you know, how can I learn how to do this? And so really out of pure need, I wrote my first book, You Are Psychic, The Art of Clairvoyant Reading and Healing. So because it was really my feeling that everyone needs to know what they can do themselves. And it just seems pretty crazy that many people live a whole lifetime and don't even realize what's available to them in their own mind. You know, how is that even possible that you can walk around and not know what you're capable of? But I was certainly in that position, and most people are until they get at least someone directs them to a certain kind of practice where they get to, you know, experience and then develop their abilities.
Now, when you and your sister were kids, did you ever share this with your parents? And if so, how did they react?
Yes, my mother was open to these topics. So, you know, she would take us to the library and be very open to the different books that we would read, and we'd have discussions with her. And, you know, we were always talking with our friends. We were always at our sleepovers talking about these things and doing different psychic exercises. So my mother was open and would say she had her own abilities as well. And I mean, she didn't really practice, but, you know, she was open and she did have you had asked me earlier if I had any UFO experiences, and I didn't have any really notable ones, but I do remember my mother told me when I was really young, and now this would have been in the 70s, she said that she was driving down the street and she looked over, something caught her eye, and she described it like a garbage can lid, like that shape, but she said it was hovering in the air about 10 feet off the ground and just going like along the speed of her car, but parallel to her, like about window level. And this thing just floated through the air. And so I remember her telling me that. And, you know, I always kind of came back to that when people asked me about her openness. So she didn't get heavily into these topics, but I do feel like she didn't try to shut us down or anything like that. And so that was really helpful. And then my father was an atheist, so he didn't really believe in any of this stuff. But I do have to say, when I got older and once my books came out, even though, you know, he would voice skepticism in one breath, but in the other, he was always trying to put me in touch with his friends who would want readings, and he would tell people about my books. And so I really appreciated that. I think there was a part of him that did want to believe, you know, it just didn't really know how to. And actually I had talked to him once, and he told me this story about how he had gone to a psychic. He lived in Florida, and I forget the exact name of the place. I think it's Casa Dega in Florida. Do you know? Are you familiar with?
No, but I think you're talking about like a psychic community.
Yeah, it's a psychic community in Florida. And so he ended up there with some friends, and he had a reading from a psychic. And she told him that when he was in his early 20s, she saw that he had a life-changing event. And in it, she said she saw him falling out of an airplane, and that this changed his perspective on life. And he said that when she told him that, he was like, no, that never happened. Like, that never happened in my life. And he said he went home, and it took him maybe 3 days or so to realize that it wasn't that he fell out of an airplane. He jumped out of an airplane when he was training for the military. And that was a life-changing event for him. But just the one change of words, falling versus jumping, he was such a literal thinker that he couldn't even make that connection of what she was talking about. So I thought that was really interesting. I use that as an example too with my students, because you know, sometimes it's really interesting how people process information differently. And, you know, some people will take basically anything you say and say, yes, that's true, even if it's not, because they're just going to, like, you know, try to find any remote connections to how it might apply to them. And then other people like that, like I once told somebody that I saw her assisting a guy in a white coat, and it seemed like he was a doctor and she was his assistant. And she was like, no, you're wrong. That's not correct at all. And then later she said, oh, well, I am a dental assistant and I work for a dentist. So, you know, she was correct. That wasn't right. There is a difference between a doctor and a dentist, but still, you know, it was fairly close. And someone else would have been like, yeah, they could make that connection. So that also gets into just the topic of what I learned to do early on, was to describe the pictures of what you're seeing rather than just trying to sum up or jumping to conclusions, because that's oftentimes where psychics or remote viewers go wrong in trying to just really fast skip over the raw data and go to a final conclusion. So,
not sure if I shared this with you the last time we spoke, but when I was a kid, I had a lot of experiences, and I was labeled as someone with an overactive imagination until certain events transpired, which sort of proved to my parents that I was actually experiencing these things. What advice would you offer to parents with kids who are having these types of experiences?
Well, it can be challenging because you don't always know what is going on whether with a child or an adult. You know, you don't know if they are just imagining things or having fantasies, or if they really are having psychic experiences or mediumship experiences. So I think first and foremost, rather than just shutting them down by you know, saying for sure that they are, it's important to listen to them and have them describe their experiences. You know, don't make any quick conclusions or decisions about it, but show an interest in what they're experiencing, talk to them, see if it continues to occur over time. And I think it can be really important for parents to get as educated in these topics as possible, first and foremost, so then they can help direct the kids in the right direction. And, you know, normalizing it, because anything that a child is experiencing, if they're told it's unusual or, you know, scary, that it's gonna become traumatic for them no matter what is happening. And many times children are experiencing these things, and, you know, children get really confused. It's so frequently they might have a dream or a premonition that perhaps someone close to them is going to die or have an accident or something like that. And I can't tell you how many both younger people and older ones referring back to their childhood say that when something like that happened and then they got verification that that person did pass away, like at the same time they had the thought of them or the day after they had the dream, they went into blaming themselves because they really didn't understand cause and effect. So to them, they thought, well, you know, I shouldn't have said anything because then, you know, maybe it made it happen, or the reactions of the adults were negative and they somehow thought that, well, you know, if I hadn't talked about it, then this person wouldn't have gotten upset about it. So yeah, I think just normalizing it, and, you know, if an adult can explain to them, like, no, you didn't cause this, you just anticipated it in advance. And that actually can be a very useful skill. But, you know, younger people also are not always very diplomatic, there's a lot of choices to be made when it comes to the intuitive information we get. And that's true of if you have a spontaneous experience or if you are doing this intentionally, like with, you know, what I do with clients. There's still all these decisions to be made when you do receive information. And so it does take a level of maturity and experience, and a lot of times younger people just don't have that. And so what I recommend to parents too is that not to shut it down in relation to other people, but I don't encourage children or teens to intentionally read people. I would say, like, to do fun exercises with them to show that our abilities can be used not just in reference to somebody dying, but to do fun psychic games, to be able to describe what's in a gift box or what is going to be on a page of a book when you open up that page next, or even like what will be on the front page of one of their favorite magazines they're going to receive in the mail. There's all sorts of really fun exercises that kids could do to learn about and develop their intuition, but not have the serious heavy duty issues to deal with. Because in a way, if you're encouraging the child to go in the direction of reading people, which is sometimes the only thing that people realize you can do with your abilities, in a way, you're sending them to be therapists, you know, children therapists with other children or adults, and that just doesn't work so well. But they do very, very well with simple remote viewing exercises.
You have a doctorate in psychology, and you did social work and victim advocacy. Did you incorporate your psi abilities in your practice?
Well, when I first started to really intentionally develop my abilities and learn how to do readings, I was practicing all the time in structured reading settings, and then also just in everyday life, always trying to tune in. And at that time, I was a federal probation officer, and I would do interviews where I would go to the federal prison and do interviews with inmates and defendants and their attorneys. And I had to do really extensive investigations into their financial situations and living situations and past record. And so many times I would tune in to see what information was I missing. And then that would help me with knowing, like, which line of questioning to ask the people. And I remember one time I was, this person had committed bank fraud. And so it was important to find out what their financial background was. And they were claiming that they didn't have any money, so they wouldn't be able to make restitution. And so I just tuned in and I had this image of three grand pianos. So when they said, no, like, I don't have any money for restitution, I said, well, what about those three grand pianos? And they just, like, their jaw dropped and they were just completely shocked. And they turned to their attorney, like, what the heck do I do? And then their attorney got mad and was like, how would you know about that? Like, you know, they got suspicious that we had somehow broken into their house and, you know, we didn't have a search warrant. But so it turned out that they did have three grand pianos in their house. So it's stuff like that was useful for that job. But I really got to the point where I did not feel good about, even though a lot of these people had really conned and scammed other people. So, you know, they needed to be stopped. But I didn't want to be in that role myself personally, where I was, you know, trying to catch people or send them to jail or force them into drug programs they weren't open to. So I ended up leaving that life completely and going the route of dedicating myself to my spiritual work. And so, but when I was a victim advocate as well, you know, I would, for domestic violence victims, there would be, I would have like a whole caseload of people that I and another police officer would go and visit to make the victims or potential victims. And there were times where I hadn't even yet had any reason to go visit someone. And I would just suddenly get the inspiration, like, today we need to go check on this person. And that day they would really be in distress. And it was really important that we had showed up when we did. So yes, I found that to be very, very helpful.
And we're going to be talking about clairvoyance and remote viewing in our next segment. My guest is Deborah Lynn Katz. Deborah, we're going to also be talking about these wonderful classes that you're going to be offering starting in June. Please tell our listeners where they can find out more about your books and your classes and everything that you do.
Yes, thank you. Well, they can check out my website, and that would be deborahkatz.com, deborahkatz.com.
And we'll be back with more of Deborah after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest, Deborah Lynn Katz. Deborah, you advocate that psychic abilities are not gifts limited to a select few, but that everyone has the potential for developing their skills. How would someone start?
Well, I would say that there's many different ways to get started. I would say that they could check out my book, and, you know, I'm not here to try to push my books on anyone, but
push your books.
They definitely, You Are Psychic, The Art of Clairvoyant Reading and Healing would be the first place to start if you really want to be able to start getting information about yourself or other people. That would be good. You know, there's really simple visualizations and that people can do. And a lot of times it's really about knowing where to focus your attention. It's really about that, like how to get dialed in to whatever you want to get information about, whether a person or a location or a photograph. You know, I kind of think of it like it's creating like this laser beam focus. And that's even one technique, like to connect yourself, whether your crown chakra or your first chakra, or to like, I use grounding a lot. So like a grounding cord connecting your body and a grounding cord connecting the object or photo or person that you want to tune into. So it's first directing your attention, and then it's quieting your mind so that information can come in about the subject matter. But then you can also, like for a person, you can call forth the energy of a person into a symbol, and then watch that symbol as it changes and as it takes on color and shape. And then you just keep watching it, and different things will happen with it. If you're remote viewing a location, you can actually imagine that you're standing at the location and start to look around, like walk over, stand at ground level, or walk over to the left or the right, or go up above and look down at the scene. And, you know, you may not initially get something, but if you keep moving around and exploring and retrying and staying focused, and you know, knowing that you're going after something specifically in terms of descriptions of that place or person or object, that's when you're going to start to get impressions. And then from there, the key is to not get stuck on interpretations or jump too quickly to interpretations, like I was mentioning before. And so, you know, in some ways it's so easy. And then in other ways, there's a lot of little nuances to it. But the biggest mistake that people make is they think that they don't have a focus. So for example, people will say, well, I've been meditating, but nothing's happening. Even sometimes, like, they start to read my book before they've like read through all of it, and they're like, yeah, I'm doing the meditations, I'm feeling better, I'm less stressed, but I'm not being psychic. And I'll say, well, it's the point of the meditations initially are like, they're just to still your mind, so you have more of a blank canvas. But until you decide you want to actually read someone and then start to move towards techniques to reading the person or location, you're not going to get a stream of information. You know, it's kind of like if you were just sitting in your room and not like, you don't just sit somewhere and say, I want to know about something. Like, you, if you're going to go online, you'd go online, you'd put in a keyword, and then you would get the information about the keyword. We, in all of life, our intuitive perception oftentimes follows our regular perception. So in regular perception, you know, if you want to see what's outside the window, you have to turn your head. You have to walk over to the window and say, oh, I want to see what's over here to the left or the right. Well, it's the same thing with our psychic abilities. You want to see what's out the window. So visualize yourself going out, and, you know, then you have to pause and wait a little bit and calm your mind. But if you go towards the window to the left, you're going to get information that way that you're going to get differently if you direct your attention that you want to see what's outside your back door, whether with your regular perception or your intuitive perception.
And of course, having a wonderful teacher and a structured program is a great way to get started. And you are the founder, as I had mentioned, of the International School of Clairvoyance. And the ISC is offering a series of great classes starting this June. Please share with our listeners about each of these classes. Let's start with Clairvoyant Level 1 and Level 2.
Well, thank you. Well, in the Level 1 class, you're going to learn the basics of how to get information about other people who are seeking readings and healings for themselves and others. And so We cover a lot of topics like how to read people's goals, how to read relationships, how to do healing on others and oneself. That's a big one. We cover a little bit of mediumship, or for sometimes it's mediumship is a part of all readings, but then we could really amp that up through focus on that. So we have a little bit of focus on that, but then I have a second, another series of classes in mediumship for those that have completed the first series of clairvoyant classes. And then in the level two class, it's really also a continuation of the first class. So then we're doing things like life path readings and past life readings and health readings. And so specialized readings, complex relationships, how to deal with troublesome entities, and how to create frequencies or change your space very quickly, even more faster than sitting down and doing regular meditation. We worked on that today in my level two class. So yeah, you know, it's all, and then there's remote viewing. The remote viewing is very different from the clairvoyant classes because it really focuses on describing locations, objects, events in the past, present, and future. It's not really about reading people who are wanting readings. It's teaching people how to gain the skills. So if they do need to like look for missing pets, missing people, participate in research projects where they're looking for remote viewing, learning how to make predictions about future outcomes. That's the topic of my latest book on associative remote viewing, predicting outcomes for financial events, sporting events, the lotto. And so the part of the remote viewing class is also giving people skills for that as well. And really in all my classes, they're designed for both beginners and for people that already are using their psychic abilities but need some fine-tuning or would like to learn how to apply them in different ways. Or sometimes people hit glitches or they're having some kind of difficulty. And so I come in and help them to just get over some bumps so that they can continue to practice, and always with the aim too of eventual professional practice if that's something that they find they would really, you know, like to do. And there are so many people out there that are needing help, like finding missing pets and people. And really, there is such a need for remote viewers and psychics who can really do a thorough job. It's very time consuming, actually, and takes a lot of just practice before you could, you know, really get dependable. But I don't think people realize that there's like a really big need for intuitives that can help find like all the missing people and pets that are out there.
And you have an ISC remote viewing class that is being offered on Udemy entitled Remote Viewing to Find Missing Things, Pets, and People. Please tell us about that class.
Yes, that's, I think it's being offered for like $9.99 right now or something like that. And so I just wanted to put something together that would give people the simple skills. So if they did lose their cat or needed to help like find missing keys or wallet or something like that, it would be easy for them to be able to do that. And, you know, it's, even though I just said like it can take a lot to, you know, get your skills up to help find missing people. On the other hand, if you've lost something like your wallet or your keys or your husband or wife has, and you have the ability to just go look around your house or your property, even if you have no idea where they are because someone else put them there, or maybe, you know, you, for whatever reason, you didn't put them there, but they're somewhere within your capacity to search for, then it is really quite easy. It may just take like closing your eyes and getting just a few quick flashes of notable landmarks, and then you can find your stuff. I can't tell you how many times I have found things, especially for my husband. He's actually getting better these days, but for like the first 10 years of our relationship, just like constantly couldn't find things. And I hope he doesn't hear this interview, but it gave me a lot of practice to use my psychic abilities to find things. And so, you know, as it's harder when someone else has to take the information you've given them and they go out and look, or there's something in remote viewing called the search problem, or it's in all of intuitive work, the problem, which is that you can give a really great description of where something is located and be spot on, but are you actually going to be able to access the place where that missing object or pet or person is to actually go look for them? And what you start finding out when you get into this is there are so many, you know, people's houses, properties. There's no way you can go and search. And another problem is that you might get a lot of like really great details, but then you find out in some neighborhoods, you know, like let's say you see like, oh, the animal is in a red barn and they have a blue tractor out in front of the house, and there's an iron gate, and there's a little pond with ducks. And that sounds so specific, but you start searching around and, you know, within a few mile radius, you might find like 10 houses that look like that. And then how are you even going to get to, you know, they might be on dozens of acres of property, each one. And, you know, how are you going to be able to go look? You're not. So that can be frustrating, but when it comes to just looking at things around your house or for your friends, you know, that's a lot more satisfying because you have access. So my course on Udemy helps people to be able to just with some very short lessons begin to make practical or have practical use of their skills. And then I would also like to give a shout out for the International Remote Viewing Association. I'm their president currently, and so I can't get away without any interview without mentioning them. They're a really great organization and a fantastic resource for anyone interested in remote viewing. We have yearly conferences. We don't yet know where this year's conference is going to be, but we will probably know and be announcing it within 2 weeks or so. But we put out a magazine called Aperture Magazine a couple times a year, and we have all sorts of classes actually offered through the International Remote Viewing Association as well. And we have a new research, fairly new research committee where we have speakers and we work on different research projects together. So we have meetings on the first Sunday of every month where our members can come and talk about their own research ideas related to remote viewing or psychic abilities. So we have a really broad range of people that are brand new to these topics and just find them interesting, to researchers, to people that are highly experienced. And the International Remote Viewing Association was founded by the original government military remote viewers and researchers going way back. So we're established to help promote the history of remote viewing and to keep it intact and alive. And we've just recently started international efforts to spread remote viewing around the world. So that's pretty exciting. We have some different, basically their chapters. We don't call them chapters, but we call them communities of special interest. And we've got a German group going and South American, and offering remote viewing classes in Spanish now too. So a lot of really exciting things going on. in this
That's
area.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And we'll talk a little bit more about remote viewing in the next segment. But the International School of Clairvoyance is offering an early bird discount for all of the classes that you're offering. How many listeners take advantage of this?
Yes. Well, if they just come to my website again at deborahkatz.com, and you can get in touch with me through the contact form. And I am going to be offering a special discount. So I already have an early bird discount that ends May, or it goes until April 1st. And then I'm also offering a special coupon of $100 off for classes for anybody that is listening to this interview. So if you get in touch with me through the website and say you heard this interview with Victor, then I can let you know about our specials and deals. And we also offer installment payments, because I know it, things ever since COVID are hard for people. So, you know, we want to make it affordable and possible for anybody to attend classes.
And we'll be back with more of Deborah Lynn Katz after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, right. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Deborah Lynn Katz. Deborah, over the past 16 years, remote viewing has stimulated public interest and curiosity, and your book, Associative Remote Viewing, was published in 2021. What is remote viewing, and how did you begin your practice?
The official definition of remote viewing would be using your intuitive abilities within a systematic, structured, and diligent approach. So it's not just a psychic ability like clairvoyance, although some people use it synonymously with clairvoyance, but it's really more, at least how one of the people who's often referred to as the father of remote viewing, Ingo Swann, that was his definition, was that it wasn't a psychic ability, but it was a way in which you use your psychic abilities. It's a type of design or experiment or a process where you're careful about how you use your psychic abilities, and careful as far as taking steps to ensure that it is your psychic abilities and not your logical mind, and taking care to record your information up front so there's, you know, no question about where the information came from or that you really did get the information, and recording it in a way and going about it so that you, as much as possible, which it's very hard to do, but as much as possible, you provide information that's not tainted with what would be considered analytic overlay, which would be where you take your impressions and turn them into your basic impressions are correct, but then the interpretations can be off. And so that is kind of the formal definition of remote viewing. People that aren't familiar with the history of remote viewing that came out of the Stanford Research Institute and other parapsychology venues and the military, the U.S. military as well, that's really kind of the background or where remote viewing in its more formal sense of the word came out of. But, you know, not everyone's familiar with that. And so some people will use the term more in a general way to acquaint it with clairvoyance.
And what is associative remote viewing, and how does that differ from traditional remote viewing?
Well, really, associative remote viewing is a particular type of design or it's like a subfield of remote viewing. It's a particular way of applying it, and it can get a little bit complicated, but I can try to briefly explain it. So years ago, researchers who were already studying remote viewing became aware that it might be possible to use it to make predictions about future events, like horse races, or like which horse is going to win the race, or which football team is going to win, or is a stock trade going to go upward or downward. And for those tasks, you can use a variety of intuitive approaches. You know, you could just like directly like close your eyes and ask to see, is the stock trade going to go up or down? Like you can see a graph clairvoyantly, or you could ask like, okay, I want to see the logo of the winning team for a football team, something like that. So that would be like a kind of a direct approach to just getting information about an outcome. But there is, when someone is repeatedly trying to get information with their psychic abilities, like let's say every week you wanted to find out with a different football game which team is going to be winning, you start coming up against some difficulties when you're doing this work repetitively, because you might get too familiar with the teams and then your logic jumps in. Or even if you're using the approach like, let me see the uniform of the winning team. Well, sometimes both teams, their uniforms look similar. There's a lot of similarities between, you know, all football players are bigger guys. They're going to be wearing similar clothes and helmets and things like that. So in order to tell the difference, which team are you describing? Associative remote viewing was developed to help with that. And so instead of looking directly at the winning horse or team, in this case, you would pair something else, like a photo, with the winning team. And then the remote viewing task is to describe the photo that is paired with the actual winner. And now, remote viewing is oftentimes done as part of a team approach, at least it traditionally, since it was part of research and then the military units where they used a team approach. So it could be a project manager who might want to know about the winning team, and then they can tell the remote viewer or remote viewers, hey, I'm going to give you a photograph as your feedback, and I want you to use your psychic abilities and describe the photograph that you're going to see tomorrow. Like, let's say tomorrow night, I'm going to show you this photo, and I want you to tell me what the photo looks like as soon as you do your session. So the viewers do their session, and let's say they said, yeah, I saw a photo and I saw like an image of a car in a garage. And so the project manager, what they would have done usually before they even told the viewers to do the session is they would have taken one photo, let's say a car in a garage, and paired it with one winning team. And then they would have taken another photo that was very different from that car in the garage, maybe like a garden, something outdoors, which would be really different from that man-made object and structure. So let's say there is like a photo of a pond and some flowers. So they know there's two flowers, and they know that after the game is played, they are going to send the viewer the photo, that only the photo that is attached to the team that wins. So theoretically, if the viewer in the future is only going to see the photo that is attached to the winning outcome, when now, like say a day earlier before the game, if the viewer describes the car in the garage, then the project manager can have some level of confidence that the team associated with the project manager did the association earlier between the photo and the team. So they can now know that is going to be the winning team, and they can place a wager on it. Conversely, if the viewer describes the photo of a garden and pond, then it's likely going to be the other team because that's what they'll be shown after the game. So it's something for them to use their psychic abilities on, but they're describing the thing that's associated with the outcome, you know, instead of just directly looking at the teams. And so there's a lot involved in that. It's really kind of a lengthy process, and sometimes it's worked well. So there's been a lot of research. I've done a lot of research personally, publishing studies on this and working with different groups, and then which led to writing the 700-page book with my writing partner, John Knowles. We ended up writing that book because there's so many people that are using this process right now, because people really like the idea of being able to make money using this approach through remote viewing. And there has been some cases where people did make a lot of money and have a lot of success. The problem is, though, it's not always consistent. And some people have lost a lot of money. Because one thing that happens is sometimes the viewers tune into the wrong photo, and there's a lot of like investigation into why would that happen. Like, you can imagine if they did a really great job describing the photo of the trees and the pond, but it turned, and then everyone gets all excited because it's like, oh my gosh, they just, you know, turned in this fantastic session. It must be this team. And then the outcome turns out to be the other team and other picture. And no one's sure exactly why that happens, but there's different theories around it, which we put forth in our book. But basically what I'm describing is called displacement. And so it's basically us, what happens when a person describes something using their psychic abilities and does a really good job, but they're describing the wrong thing. They're describing the wrong target. And then in that case, it can really screw things up.
Absolutely. And you're having a remote viewing class starting in June. My guest, Deborah Lynn Katz. Deborah, please tell our listeners one more time about the offerings that are coming up this summer.
Thank you. Well, yes. So we have several classes starting in June. We have a remote viewing 10-week class where we get together and do fun exercises each week. And then there's also practice opportunities in between. And so I really try to prepare people to learn everything they possibly can about how to describe objects, locations, look for missing things and people, and preparing them so they can go on to further practice, even professional practice. And so that'll be starting in June, once a week classes. And then I have my clairvoyant class series that has to do with reading people, and a mediumship class as well. And people can learn about these through my website at deborahkatz.com, deborahkatz.com.
Deborah, always a pleasure to have you on Destination Unlimited. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much. And thanks to everyone for listening.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.